All right, we are live-ish.
So when you lost power, does that mean you were dethroned? Fast noise?
I think that is actually what happened, yeah. one of the joys of living in rural areas. Shit don't work.
Joyous. Yeah, that's for sure.
So, and then my iPad was being weird. So we're back on the phone, which means the battery's shit.
So, gotta make it quick.
Yeah, so you can either get a microphone or you can get battery. You cannot have both. That's just not a thing. That's not how we roll. We do have matching red shirts today.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's yours, Patrick's?
No, mine has like nothing whatsoever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, it's a t-shirt, but it's sort of made to look like a polo a little.
Ah, yes.
It's like a fake polo.
So we have four people viewing right now. Hey. One person is noised, and three are a mystery. One might be you. I'm not sure.
That is possible. That might be a ghost account. And the other two are also noised, but like with a VPN set to different place in the world.
Awesome.
Because it would be suspicious if there were three Italians. So now we got like he's moonlighting as like an Algerian.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. I have good food there.
Algeria?
I think so. We went to this market over in Columbus, and they had, like, I think it was, like, a Somali food stand. Like, indoor mall thing with, like, different food stands. It looked so good, but we had just eaten, like, an enormous amount of food. So I felt, like, really bad. I couldn't eat any, but so we had gone to, like, a German-style restaurant and just, like, eaten, like, Mad Men in the morning. So now I've been, like, thinking, because you just can't get that stuff, like, where we live.
No. I mean, it's only polite to stuff yourself silly, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. So Noise thought maybe you meant IRL, like LS dethroned you from the Weasel House. I'm not sure who LS is.
Lancelot?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There we go. And Noise is thinking bourbon, so if he's just slurring his letters, then...
Oh, I don't know if that affects his typing. I think that's, like, pretty solid.
Yeah, it's weird. I always was able to type when I was drunk, too, for the most part. That's how I learned to type.
Like in did you have like typing classes in school?
It was terrible.
We just played because the people who already had a computer anyway always like completed the assignments like 5 minutes, and then we just played SimCity or whatever.
Oh yeah,
that was like the one thing, because they had like I guess it was like an educational version of it or something.
Oh nice.
So it was just the same game, but I think there was like binders that explained how a city works or something. We just played SimCity.
Oh yeah, we didn't have fancy Macs. We had the black and white ones. Like they're still like an iMac looking thing, but like ancient.
Oh yeah. Mac. Ours were all like DOS PCs from like the year zero.
Yeah,
there were the old ones where they had like the turbo button.
Ooh.
So if you need that extra power, or if you need to cheat in Tetris, you can turn the turbo off.
Oh yeah.
Exactly. You got like a little extra time to. Stuff done.
The L team is Ludwig, Lawrence, and Lancelot.
Oh, okay. Yeah. In hindsight, naming them all things with L has often been a mistake.
You yell them and forget their names?
Which one? Yeah, we'll mix up like who is who pretty frequently. So,
well, today's topic on episode 26 of the Bad Internet Friends podcast does not start with an L. It does start with a C. The topic is campaigns. Yeah. And specifically for me, I'm kind of at the point where I'm trying to figure out how the campaign is going to work for the game I'm working on, Endless Hammer. Yeah. But I figured it would be a good broad topic overall, just speaking of campaign talk. The kind of philosophy that can go into designing a campaign for a certain style of game. Or if you wanted to create a campaign for a game that doesn't have one.
Mm-hmm. Which is a frequent, I feel like there was some point where like it changed and suddenly like every game comes with some sort of campaign rules, but it didn't used to be the case. Like a lot of games just never had something, or they had like, like one page in the back.
Yeah. Planetfall.
Campaigns are kind of, cause I feel like there's two different things people could mean. Maybe even three, I don't know. Cause like at the very like simplest, it's just like, like we play some games and they're like connected together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's all, if we say like, okay, you won, so then your guys get to like try to sneak into my fortress.
Yeah, that's right.
like that's a campaign. But I think nowadays people tend to mean something more like, you know, you have like stats improving or you get like a mechanical thing, right?
Yeah, that's right. And consequences.
It's more involved. You can get some upgrades. It's like the RPG thing. It's like when I forget how many video games you play, but like for a while it felt like every video game had to have some sort of like XP system and progression in it, even if it was like Call of Duty has more like RPG elements than some like RPGs I play. Like actual like tabletop role-playing games.
So
I feel like when people talk about like campaigns now, that's kind of what they mean, because you don't really need like, you can get like one book somewhere that tells you how to do like a just open-ended campaign where you just make up stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all you need. Like, you don't need to adjust that to like the game you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the goal you're kind of aiming for?
Well, I guess I should start with the concept of the game. So yeah. Endless Hammer is like SRPG, you know, it's a JRPG style tactical game. So it's meant to be on a grid. It's meant to be like character based. So
it's like I envision four tactics dudes. Ogre and
yeah,
Final Fantasy Tactics and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know why four, but four just kind of seems like the thing. Like four against darkness for some reason just seems the most appealing.
The original Final Fantasy only had four dudes.
Yeah, that's probably why, honestly, because that's my favorite game.
It's a good number.
So the campaign kind of affects. Like, what? Why are these guys even here? What are they doing? Like, if you're going to spend the time to set up an isometric map on a grid with various levels, and you're going to put out the enemies, and why are you even doing this? It's a big question. That's what I think where the campaign comes from.
Especially it gives like a context, right?
Yeah,
like you're fighting these dudes because, well, sometimes because that's what the random table set to do. But
yeah, that's right. And in a versus game, if you're playing against another opponent, then often you might set up your story yourselves, or you're just going to fight it out because you just want to play. You both painted up your guys, and now it's time to fight.
But with
a game like this, I don't think that's really its strong point, necessarily.
Well, those games always have, like, very strong either stories or characters or something. Like, you have to have, like, a personal, you know, hook to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just for, you know, a random fighter or whatever. It's, you know, this dude.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and he's mad at these guys, and therefore they're going to face.
Yeah. But like role players often just kind of make up their own stories anyway. Like if you go and you have like a random game night, and then you sit down at the table and you bring out your guys, and then the other guy, your opponent, isn't a role player. He's like, oh, these are my guys, and this is their story, and they're going to fight that particular one on your side because he said this. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
we'll go with that, sure. But with a campaign, especially in a solo and cooperative system, I feel it really needs to have a story progression.
Yeah, that's something that, like, it's all about, like, the ongoing investment, right? Like, I did something, and now that has an effect on, like, the next thing I do.
So I took a page from 5 Parsecs from Home, of course, and I added, you know, character events and campaign events. You know, there's a injury table. Kind of more time, and mostly games like that will often follow an injury table to kind of build up, you know, that end of the story. So things are happening to your guys. That's more procedural generation to create a narrative story. But it kind of
it's all about making the world like seem bigger, right? Like there's stuff that can happen that didn't just happen on the table.
Yeah, exactly. But like for like the core guys that you have, I don't really know which way I want to advance them per se. Like, are they going to get stronger? So, like, you're playing all these games. Are the guys getting stronger, or are they always just going to stay stagnant? You know, if they're dead, you just raise them with new guys, but then they become kind of faceless.
Yeah, there's that. Because it's like, you have, on one hand, you can, like, you know, you dudes keep, like, improving. They get new skills or stats, or they get better at things. Or they get loot, like a new weapon and stuff.
Right?
That's, like, the typical. But you could also have something where, like, I'm trying to think of a game that does this, but I feel like there must be one where you just get more options to work with. So, like, at the start, your fighter has, like, two skills, and you pick which one you want to use. But later, later, they can still only use, like, one skill, but now they have four to pick from, and they get, like, you know, a permanent bonus from something, and there's a couple you can choose from. So, like, you can just get more. It's almost like unlocking stuff in a, like, in a lot of, like, FPS competitive games. You don't necessarily... Like, my guy doesn't get, like, three different abilities. I just get to choose between three. I still can only use, like, one of them or something.
Yeah.
So,
I'm just going to touch base 1 sec with chat to say hi to Pure Blind. How you doing? Good to see you. Hey. And Noise to saying his own campaign is more of a wide story. Basically, the nation in which the Civil War is raging and the encounters inform the background story for future battles. And there are 6 main factions.
Hey.
Yeah, so I think without anybody like really progressing overall, that kind of just tells a story too, because you're going to have, you know, the maps ebb and flow.
Yeah, well, so that's almost the, because there's kind of like an up and a down to it. If you're following like 4 specific characters, then everything has to be those 4 guys. Yeah, they can only go so many places, right?
Yeah. Or in this case, like, it's not necessarily stuck with 4 people, but you're only going to play 4 people on the map.
Yeah.
You might have more in your roster, say, and they could also be affected.
Sure. They could go somewhere else. Yeah. You could even have like you have a whole bunch of guys and you have to like send them out to different. You know, maybe there's like 3 different missions. So you can't bring like the strongest guy or your favorite guy like every time. Sometimes you gotta send like the B team, right?
That's right.
But it's also like, I'm trying to phrase it. It's like the more you like structure it, the more specific it gets. Because if you say, okay, there's not gonna be any rules to the campaign, we're just gonna make stuff up and what happens, well, which it sounds like that's what Noost is kind of doing. Yeah. Then because you don't have like mechanics for it, you can also kind of just do whatever. Like if you want to say that, okay, I'm gonna like swap sides now and play from the other side.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or like I want to go back like 50 years in time and like have these 2 characters fight each other because because that happened, I decided. You know, like if you don't have rules for it, you can kind of do like any number of things. Just flesh it out or turn it around or, you know. Whereas if you have rules for it, you can still do some of those things, but it becomes a little more. If I'm leveling up like my guys, I don't know that I want to like suddenly play a different group of guys.
Yeah.
In like you know, like I want to just play my guys, unless it's like a one-off kind of thing. Like maybe you play as the villains for 1 mission just to like add some flavor or something.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So yeah, it's like, but it's also the downside of like too much advancement is that it's kind of like, you know, like. The opportunities get like more and more narrow. Like if it's like in any JRPG where you start off fighting like slimes in a forest, and then at the end of it, you're fighting like God in space. You know, like you can't, those characters can't go back to the forest with the slime. Like it doesn't work. There's no point in them existing there. So like you, the more you like progress, the more it kind of like, you know, kind of pins you down towards, especially if it's unlimited. And you did call it, you know, endless quest, right? Or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Endless ammo. It is endless. It's not ending.
Yeah, but that might be one thing that always stuck out to me with a lot of those Final Fantasy Tactics had like quite a few. You could get quite a few characters, like the Disgaea games. You can have like I think basically like as many characters as you like. Sukoda had like 50 or something. They always had like tons of characters. And it was kind of this idea that you might get some new characters and then you work on like leveling them up for a while. So you're like building out this like roster.
Yeah,
that's true. I guess a lot of those like mobile. Like gotcha bullshit games kind of work like that, where they have like 2,000 characters and the one that you want, you can't have.
Yeah, exactly.
This is like a $500 microtransaction, or it has like a 0.0001% chance of dropping.
But when you get it, you get that sweet, sweet rush.
Yes. And then you realize it'll take 200 more hours to like level up the character because you don't have all the materials.
Yeah. And then you get all the rare drop materials too to get up to the higher tiers.
Yeah. And in order to, you got to like refine them by getting 5 of the same one, which you will never do. And then it becomes 1 of the mega material. Yeah.
Yes.
But I think you could like use some of that like for good instead of evil by making it more of a, like there's something cool about like being able to get, you know, more characters kind of adding. It's just, you got to balance it out against, because the new guys coming in are just like level 1 shitters and your dudes are all level 18. You know, you're going to pick the level 18 guys, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I was trying to think of ways to balance it. I mean, because no one actually knows the core mechanics of the game. It's kind of hard to explain.
Yeah.
But well, I could give like a brief overview.
Yeah.
So you have stats like a JRPG. So, and those give you attack and defense and magic, you know, HP, MP, things to work off of. And you have skills. So you have core skills and you have skills you can learn, sort of thing. So you have like 1 skill your character always has. And like a few ones that kind of go with the class or the race, you know, depending on just what I felt like at the time.
Yeah. It could be like anything.
Yeah. And so I figured to increase the stats, I didn't want to do like an XP system for that. So I don't want to say, oh, this guy, you know, you could spend all your money into like attack and then like just raise it up really high or have like only like certain like maximums, like this class can only have this many stats. I don't want to go through that kind of work.
Yeah.
So I did it through a system where when you acquire treasure through the dungeon, it can be an artifact and you use the artifact in battle and sometimes it has good effects, like you raise your stats permanently, or bad effects where you lose those stats permanently, or just something completely random happens.
Like you gotta gamble a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a big, that's the gotcha part, you know, like you don't know what you're going to get until you start rolling.
Yeah, yeah. That's like gotcha rather than gotcha, I think.
Yeah. Gotcha. And then the skills are kind of like the thing. It's like, because I've been watching a lot of, I think it's called Isekai, where like people from a, you know, like our world into like, oh no, I'm in a fantasy world and everything's kind of like a game and I see all my stats and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I'm addicted to all that right now.
There's like a ton of those shows.
Yeah. And they're always building up skills. And I feel like the skills is where you should have more agency and the stats are kind of like, you know, random where you don't really know what you're getting.
Yeah. Cause there's like with skills, it's like, it feels more like it's the stuff that the character like does on a regular basis, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
that's right.
Like you can go out, like if you wanted to like get good at like mowing the lawn, you can go out and mow the lawn. You'll level up.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a little different. I mean, you can go and like lift the lawnmower, you'll get stronger, but it's a little more nebulous. So yeah, I feel like skills tend to feel better if they are more under the player's control.
Yeah. Or you can learn to knit, say, but if you don't have very good dexterity, maybe you're never going to be a very good knitter.
Yeah. Or you have to work harder at becoming a knitter. Like you can still get there, but you have to like put in the hours with the knitting needles. You got to go hang out with the old ladies, get the,
I'm an
the,
S-tier the dark, knitter.
The dark lore. It's also because basically like the core of it is, do you know the skills will be like in steps or is it just yes, no, or is it like points or like how many?
I haven't figured that one out yet. That's one of the.
Because if there's like three steps to a skill, like you're okay, good, or master.
Okay, yeah,
like,
I see. Yeah.
Then the step to go from one to the next probably needs to be pretty high. Mm-hmm. But if they're like, it's a number that's being added, like a d20, like in D&D, then like each step is like, you know, not very much.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a different, you can also have like escalating cost, like a lot of RPGs will do this where it's like buying the first step costs whatever. And then the second step costs like double that or whatever. So it's like, so you could get like a whole bunch of low skills or you can put all your points into. And if it's a video game, you should always just max out one skill.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's so always where you get the good shit.
Yeah. For me, I figured since it's themed around, you know, like the whole adventurer kind of thing, and adventurers' guilds in anime always have classes, like you know, like S class versus or S tier, A tier, B tier, then the skills could be aligned to that way. That could be one aspect.
Yeah. Or that feels very like Japanese, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or I could just go completely random and say, you know, this skill belongs to this racial type or this class type. And then you could roll on a chart and then you get to decide.
Yeah. I mean, you could also like kind of do both. You could have like, depending on how like unique the races are, or the classes or whatever, you could have like some skills are like tied to a certain thing and some are just available for everybody. So, like anyone can learn to fight with a sword, but you have to be like a lizard man to like learn, I don't know, how to.
Well, well.
Yeah, you know, that's a common lizard man thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They do that all the time. It's kind of a bother, actually. So look around your house and there's a fucking lizard man hanging there on the wall.
Yeah, licking their eyeballs.
Yeah, it's weird, man. I'm not into that. They can do that at a different house, like the neighbor whose Wi-Fi I was using earlier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know how it reached all the way over here, actually.
Noise is saying, I don't have my own faction. I play them all, and the battles are two-fisted. Every chapter is one focus faction, and 2 to 6 battles are fought where other is chosen randomly. Okay.
So you can kind of mix it up, especially if you're... and that's kind of the... It's like the like sit down and play to see what happens, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's... You can kind of do whatever. Like, you could grab... Like, oh, I haven't played this faction in a while, so I'm just going to see what happens. But they got their asses kicked, so that's probably why we haven't heard from them in a while.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. You know. Yeah, and that's a very sort of... You know, it's all in the... It's very, I don't know, storytelling, I guess?
Yeah.
There was this game I saw... I'm going to digress for just a second here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But there was this game I saw, a guy running at a convention, and it was basically just, like, you would just... It wasn't even a war game, although it had miniatures. It was like some characters in like this wilderness, and it was like vaguely fantasy, but it was mostly wilderness. Mm-hmm. And like you could just say what you wanted to happen on the board, and then if the other player didn't think that should happen, they would roll two dice, 2d6, and if it was a 7, it didn't happen, and any other roll it did. And then you just kind of kept like taking turns and having things happen, and so they would have like, you know, like one guy would wander off to go find like a like spirit in the forest so he could like turn into a bear or something. And another character, like it was very sort of open ended, and it's kind of like decided what you wanted to do. And then if the other person thought it was bullshit, they can roll the dice to to determine if that's true or not.
Yeah, bullshit. My 7 says so.
Yeah, exactly. Which I mean, it is the most common roll. But yeah, I think the other thing you can do. Oh, I rolled an 11, so you just got whatever stupid shit you wanted to ruin the game.
Yeah, that's right.
So, laser bear.
Laser bear.
The other thing you can also, it depends on, like, how much, because you can, like, overcomplicate things endlessly, right? But it is endless hammer, so maybe the complexity is endless. Because you can also have, like, skills that, like, level up and get better, and then you can have, I always call them traits, but, like, something that your character has that's just yes or no. So, like, our lizard man has, like, armor, like scaly armor.
Yeah,
that's not a skill, it's just a thing he has, but maybe he can like get a trait that lets him like deflect lasers with his scales.
And it's okay, yeah
binary on or off. It's kind of like feats in like Dungeons and Dragons games where they do like a thing and they can modify a skill or they can give you a bonus, or a lot of times they let you do something the rule, like skills usually still work within the rules. Like if you have a skill for like fighting with your sword, it lets you do more damage or make more attacks or something, but it's like you're still like using the combat rules. But if you have a trait that lets you like have a ghost sword, maybe you can like hit people through walls or something, so like it gives you a way of breaking the rules in some way.
Yeah that's right.
So which is another, it's like having multiple like progression paths, right? Because you can like so you can improve your attributes in some way, maybe through magic or artifacts. You can improve your skills through like grinding and fighting goblins. You can maybe get traits, or maybe you can get items. Like JRPGs always have like equipment slots, right?
Yeah exactly. So I gotta skip like that one, I think.
Yeah, or you can keep it like real simple.
Yeah,
that's something you can always like bolt on later.
So yeah,
like, oh, now we have magic hairpins and everyone can get like one magic hairpin.
Yeah. Except I feel like before I started hanging out with you guys, or you especially, maybe I would just try to design a game that just seemed like it would do whatever I wanted to do. But now when I think about designing a game, I'm like, I got to keep this really simple so people can figure it out. I don't want to overcomplicate anything. I'm like, is this too complex?
Yeah.
Is what I'm thinking right now really just like overcomplicated?
Yeah, it's very easy to get like, I'm kind of prone to, I love mechanics where like when you do something, roll a die, if you get like a 6, something extra happens. But people always like forget to do it.
Yeah,
and it never, because it almost never happens, you might as well just like ignore it. I think sitting down and playing something actually is like really, because you'll notice almost immediately which things you like just forgot about, even though you created it. So like if you have like, oh, attacking like diagonal is a -1 penalty for some reason, and then like you immediately forget when you sit down to play, maybe that could just not be a thing.
Exactly.
So sometimes it's harder to create something that's simple because you only have like so many, you know, like a, like squad hammer combat is simple. Like roll two dice to hit and do 1d6 damage, and everything else is just a complication on top of that. But the simpler it is, the less things you can kind of bolt into it. Like if there's no distinction, it's like games where, well, I guess it fits with squad hammer anyway, where like if there's no distinction between being difficult to hit and being in cover and being like armored, right? Like it's all just a hit roll. That means that everything you do can only go into that one thing, which is your chance of getting hit. If you have like in squad hammer, you have separate damage, so now you have two. It's I think I've said it before, they're levers. Now you have two things you can pull on, because now you can have a thing that makes you harder to hit or reduces the damage you take. So now you have two different factors, because they, even if they, the math is the same, they don't necessarily like feel the same. Like a fast character who takes less damage from hits feels kind of weird, you know. You know, if you have like a rock man, him being hard to hit would feel bad.
Yeah, that's right.
But if you have the two things, then you can make him easy to hit, but he takes less damage. So, and then that can affect certain things, you know. But you can also get like carried away with it, because you can have, you know, let's say if you have like you have to hit the target, and they have to defend, and then you have to do damage, and you have to get through their armor, and then you have to determine if they get knocked down, and then you have to determine if they're mana meter, you know, like...
Yeah, simulationist.
Yeah. Or you... Yeah, it is easy to get, like... Because that gives you a lot of options, but it also, like, gets out of hand, like, real fast, especially if it's solo, because then it's just one dude who has to keep track of it all.
Yeah, it was like if you got co-op, at least, then you might have someone to remind you, and an opponent will always remind you. If you
screwed
up, but not if you forgot something that was good for you.
Yeah. Like, you forgot. You remember that minus one penalty, but you didn't remind me that I forgot to move my tank. Thanks, buddy. We need an episode about, like, gamer etiquette at some point. Let some of those shitheads know what's up.
Yeah. Got it. So Noise says, playing a game as an adventure proxy, I like the idea of acquiring loot to increase your powers. Yeah. I thought so too.
I think a loot based approach could be really cool. I feel like a lot of roguelike video games are like that too. Your character doesn't really you might level up, but it doesn't matter that much. It's some hit points, but the loot you find determines how your character goes.
Yeah. I like having a mix. So I feel that if you use the artifacts to increase your stats, you know, that's outside of your own control. It's kind of a bonus. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And if you use what you are adventuring for to increase your skills, then that's your own agency. So you kind of get a mix of the two, you have a little bit of control, but a little bit of randomness at the same
time. I feel like this also too, because there's some games where experience is almost completely, it's just a function of playing. You could literally just say that every time you play, one guy levels up a skill or something.
Yeah.
And then there's some games where it's more specific because there's certain things you could do to get XP. Maybe it's in more time, I think you get more XP for killing dudes or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's different qualifiers at the end usually.
Yeah, so it's okay, well, if I have my brand new guy, might want to set up a situation where he can get some kills, right?
Yeah, exactly. But he might also die, so then you get nothing.
Yeah, the whole thing was you spent eight turns getting him maneuvered, and then he rolls a one anyway.
Yeah, I had a vampire, and my goal is, of course, just get him in combat as much as possible so he could get more experience, so he could get better skills. It becomes more of a murder machine.
Yeah,
when I had goblins, I'm I'm just going to hide my leaders because they're not strong enough. They'll never be strong enough. And I need them there to find shards afterwards.
That's kind of how I played Skaven, which fit because I imagine a Skaven leader would definitely send his dumbass minions out to get killed on his behalf.
Yeah.
So he would just stand in the back behind a line of dudes with spears and slings, being little bitches.
Yeah, that's the goblin way.
Absolutely. If you're little, you got to fight dirty.
That, I think you're in reference to the seven, the roll of seven system. Sounds like Angle Matrix, but I'm not sure.
It looked very Matrix-y. It might have been one of those things. There was a bunch of a lot of that stuff was big in the UK scene for a while, I guess. It was definitely Matrix derived. For the uninitiated, a Matrix game is basically a game that is run by arguments, where you say what you want to do, usually for your faction. You're not playing a character necessarily. You might be a leader. So you say if it's a military thing, you might say, my troops are going to advance to capture this village, and they're going to succeed because they're well-trained, well-supplied, and there's no enemy troops nearby.
Yeah.
And other players might say, but the weather is really terrible and there are raiders in the bushes, so that might make them not work. And then you might roll, the ref might just decide, or you might roll dice and see, so it's plus one for each argument or whatever.
Nice.
But yeah, it's often used. It's actually a professional thing. People use it for evaluating conflicts and political situations and stuff.
Okay.
But you can use it as a a hobby game as well. I did a Matrix thing with a kid that was about raiding the Death Star.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, you can use it for anything. All you need is conflict. And it's, but yeah, it was very similar in that sense. And you can apply some of those ideas to campaign, especially narrative tabletop campaigns. The oldest campaign system I've ever used have always just been, if I win, I get to say two things that could happen. You get to say one, and then we pick randomly which one happens.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And then we move on. So it's I think I don't know if it was for Warzone or old school 40K, but we created it for that. And then that was just always how we did campaign. We would sometimes have stuff where you would, we were more rules bound at the time. So it was you just swap out a character. Like, this is the same guy, but now he's like this cooler character type or something.
Leveled up.
Yeah.
Let's see. Pierre Blind says, for solo games, games that don't have any aspect of secrecy usually work really well.
Yeah, it's hard to
be upfront. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to like surprise yourself. Like a big random table can do it if there's like 20 results that can happen. But in the end, like you can't really like surprise yourself in that sense. So you just have to kind of like the surprise is usually what ends up happening. You can take the pieces and combine them and then see what happens on the table, you know.
Noise is scolding us because he said angle matrix. So the quote is, roll 2d6, 7 plus the action happens, it cannot be alterer. 6, id does not happen and cannot happen.
Gotcha.
So I'll flash it up.
Yeah.
There we go. So specifically angle matrix.
Yes, because it's one of those concepts that have been like developed out by like a bunch of different dudes.
Okay.
So you'll see like different permutations. But yeah, that's basically like the original version. Some versions will also give you like a bonus if you keep like missing your rolls or something.
Oh, okay. Got it. So we got the matrix system. We got the angle matrix system, which is very specific.
Actually, this is so old, everyone forgot about it again. But I, my own war story rules were a sort of derivative of matrix rules.
Okay.
So, but trying to like make them a little more, add a little more structure for like combat situations. They're like kind of, I don't want to say post matrix, but you know, gotta sound cool. Post matrix just sound like it's after the Matrix movies came out. Like,
yeah,
Matrix
yeah,
exactly. Revolutions were like the cutoff point for culture, and everything else since then is something different. It's all been downhill.
Yeah. Pierre Blind asks, what are some of your favorite existing campaign systems?
So I'm going to ask a counter question then. Do you mean like for a, like my armies and your armies, or do you mean for like my guys? It's a warband. Because those probably don't really compare. The one I have most fond memories of was this. I think everyone has done this at some point. It was actually from the Citadel Journal, but you could come up with it on your own. You take a giant map that is way too large, and then you build like a 50,000 point Warhammer army. And then you break it up into like 50 armies and you make little paper things with numbers on them. You put them all on your side and then you like move them all or write hidden orders. And then after doing that for 3 weeks, you've had one battle because you set up too far apart and now summer vacation is over and you never finish it. That's a good shit.
Yeah.
I almost never write map-based campaigns because they always like grind out. But that is like, to me, that is like the peak of like military campaigning. It's like moving dudes around a map because you get that, if it works, you get that whole thing of like, well, this army has already fought a battle, so I lost like a bunch of my guys. They're still okay. So I'm going to put those forward to like slow you down or whatever. Like you get that whole kind of vibe. Or you can be, you know, kind of clever. Your opponent like forgets which army is which. When it comes to like a warband campaign, this is going to sound terrible because I don't play very many warband games myself. It's basically policy. What I play personally is almost never connected to anything I write professionally because I think you just get worse at creating things if you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just for me. Some people disagree fiercely. But it was, I'm trying to remember, it was like a 40K knockoff game, like in the Emperor's Name or something.
Okay, yeah.
I think it became like a real thing, but like under a different, like non-40K.
Yeah, it was big in the 7th edition, I think.
Yeah,
people were kind of angry about 7th edition.
Yeah, it might have been around that time, actually. But it had this thing where like you're investigating, and then like if you succeed, you would roll for like what mission you play. And if you're failed in investigation, then there was like a different list of missions where the enemy like comes attacks you. So you have to like fight them off and then you get back to your investigation or something like that. It's been years. But I always thought that was really cool that it was kind of like two different. It was the same, you know, like you're just fighting dudes.
Yeah.
But there was kind of like two different tracks. So you like if you screwed up one of the missions, you had to like take this detour to like fight off some goons, essentially. So the really like classic one is the old Space Crusade board game, which I'm pretty sure we've talked about before. But it was like like baby's first Space Hulk. But it did have a campaign kind of built in where your like sergeant for your squad got like he would gain ranks. I think it was like 5 ranks or something. And the effect of them was you could pick more equipment cards. So okay. Normally you would get to take 4 cards out of the 8 that your chapter had. But each promotion would let you take another card. So you could potentially have all 8. And then there was a second deck that I forget how it all fit together. But basically, yeah, you got more options to choose from. So dudes didn't really get any better. They might, like, your regular Space Marines would die, like, constantly. So they were just faceless guys. but you would go in, as you played the game, you would come in, like, a little better prepared each time, and you would be better. You have more options, more equipment, and stuff like that. So it was kind of an interesting that. So your squad was cooler or better because they're more experienced. But it wasn't because, like, their stats changed. Like, you would still roll the same dice and move the same distance. But it was also tied up entirely in just your, like, sergeant or your captain, I think they were called. If he died, you just start over. Like, there was there was no injury table either. Like, this, he did have, like, 6 hit points, and everyone else only had 1. But, like, if he was gone, that was it. You're just starting over. So, yeah, it was pretty brutal. But it was always, like, it was interesting to me because it was very early. This is, like, I want to say early 90s. It's, like, about the same time as HeroQuest, the board game, so... Maybe nice. That's late 80s, early... I'm not going to look it up. It was around that time.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about Space Crusade. No one had ever talked about it until later on. But it looked really cool.
I think it may have only been released in Europe and only in certain countries. Okay. Apparently in Germany it was called like Star Quest or something. But okay. I don't think it had a North American release. So, yeah, it was just a weird... Because it was Milton Bradley Games, I'm pretty sure. The same guys who did Hero Quest. I don't know why... They just thought, like, North Americans, they don't understand what space is. Like,
now I understand why Barnes & Noble is getting all those exclusives. It's revenge.
Yeah. It's finally, it's weird because HeroQuest, like, not only did have a North American version, but, like, that was actually, like, the better one than the UK versions. Someday I will have a format where I can talk about, like, all the stuff I found out about, like, the Japanese version of HeroQuest, which was completely bananas. Because they looked at the game and the components and were like, we're going to make our own completely different game with all this shit.
Well, it makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, roll your own. But yeah, so that was kind of like an interesting way of doing a campaign where it's basically like your guy, your captain, and then the random... It's like Nine Inch Nails, which is just like Trent Reznor and some random guys he like found for this album. We'll never see them again.
Yeah, studio artists.
Yeah. Like if you follow him on a tour somewhere, it's probably like different guys each city. It's like, who's that dude on keyboard? Like, we don't fucking know. Found him in a bar. Trent Reznor says he's cool this week.
Yeah, this week.
So, cool. He'll be gone by the time we get to Philadelphia.
I'm going to touch base with the chat just one sec.
Yeah.
Pure Blind says, I haven't really messed with campaigns too much. Battletech Mercenaries looks interesting, though. And the White Dwarfs used to have some very interesting soloable 3-mission campaigns, which I always like the idea of. Little, tiny campaigns.
Yeah. I think they did some for Middle-Earth, too. Maybe I'm remembering it wrong.
That makes sense.
But yeah, like, I think there's a tendency also to, like, try to make it too big. I think there's nothing wrong with it being kind of a contained. Like old historical like wargame magazines would always have these where it's like 2 or 3 scenarios that are just linked together.
Yeah,
that's right. And that's like enough for like, you know, if you're sitting down to play just for a weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you can play like 3 scenarios or 4 scenarios or something. Then you're kind of done. You've had a good experience and you get to like finish it, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That feels like, it always feels more motivating too when you actually finished what you started. Like if you did half a campaign and you never got to finish it, then you kind of just lose track of the game and you're like,
yeah, and it feels
good. I'll play this other one.
Right. Yeah, it can feel kind of bad. I guess it doesn't matter if it's like a game that doesn't have an end, like Parsec just keeps going as long as you want. But you can set your own. But yeah, there's something like I think people like sleep on the benefit of having like a little contained like experience.
Yeah.
There's this thing I want to make someday. Which would be like some basic rules, just like a skirmish thing, some very basic, like move, shoot, morale kind of thing. But then you would get like, it would be all about like little boxed campaigns that are like 5 games or 10 games or something. And they would just be different situations. Like one could be like getting off an alien like space station or something. Another could be like it's the American Civil War and you're like skirmishing with the reps or something. But they would all be just like a little, you know, little thing in a box. You can play it in like a week, and then you're kind of done until the next one comes out.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing with Endless Hammer, is I'm making what's called World Books right now.
Oh, okay.
It's a working title. And each one, like right now, I'm just adapting role-playing campaigns to them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like throwing things out there to see, you know, what looks interesting. So like my first one was, well, it's based off of Goblin Slayer. So you know, like travel through the caverns, you know, like things kind of escalate, and then it has like a conclusion. And then I wanted to somehow tie them together. So if you play one world book, then, you know, it affects the overall campaign. And the next one you play, like you choose, like, because you're Adventurers Guild,
I feel like
taking on like adventuring contracts, you know, like it like moves the clock up towards.
I feel like that requires like a big like galactic villain that it all turns out to, like, after you complete like two worlds, like you find out like who the villain's like lieutenant is. And after four worlds, you find out like what dimension he's from or something.
Yeah. 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 So it just kind of builds up the clock.
No, that's a really cool idea. Plus, like, anime shows like always like rip each other off. So you can kind of like pay homage to it intentionally.
Yeah.
Like,
it's all derivative all the time.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that looks an awful lot like the world from whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Don Juan Don says, hey. He's a big fan of Heroes of the Aturi Cluster campaign and system. He's hoping to hope some of that gets injected into Battletech going forward. I'm not familiar with that one,
Archie. Yeah, not either. But the Aturi Cluster. But that just goes to show how many there are out there now.
Yeah. And Noise is saying they were playing Star Quest, around 93. I wasn't a fan of the aesthetic, though, specifically the enemies. Like those giant-headed grots.
Oh, yes. I have a soft spot for those, but they all...
I love those grots, yeah.
The orcs, they all had like all shouting and had their arms like out to their sides.
Yeah, really weird little teeth.
Yeah, and then it was like... Because you had like orcs and Gretchen, then you had Gene Stealers, Chaos Space Marines, and like robots.
Yeah.
Like,
not Necrons.
Yeah, Necrons would be around like a while. Yeah. They were just like, I think they
Chaos Androids. That's what they called them.
That's what it is, yes. I put them in Rogue Hammer.
Nice. Yeah, I got some of those. They're pretty cool sculpts, honestly.
Those were really neat. I was, because they had like this really long rifle with like a really long bayonet on it.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
oh, and the Chaos Dreadnought from that box is awesome. I love that.
Which is definitely not like the big robot from like one of the RoboCop movies.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely not.
But yeah, that one's really cool with because it has the two heavy weapons like hanging down from like, it doesn't really have arms. It just has like weapon mounts. But I remember when we all got into, because we had played Space Crusade before we learned about like real Warhammer, and those Dreadnoughts definitely like showed up a bit before. Oh, yeah. They got banished from everyone's tables. There was a while where everyone had like one Space Marine squad that was just like two of their Space Crusade squads.
Oh yeah,
that been raided. It was always like weird because one of the Space Marine models had an assault cannon, which is like a Terminator weapon, but it was just like lugging it around, and it was cool. So yeah, that was good shit. But yeah, there was some odd choices. I think they were just like going through the book and picking out like everything that could be a villain. There was even like extra stuff in White Dwarf. There was like, you could play like as orcs in Eldar. There were rules like a Terminator squad, which just meant like obliterating the entire board. Nothing could stop them. That game was mad. But yeah, it was such an interesting thing. There was another, I don't know if that, this one I think had at least American release, Siege of the Citadel, which was the Mutant Chronicles kind of dungeon crawler war zone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very similar. You fight like Ghibli monsters and you get upgrades, and it's the same. I think the upgrades are mostly cards. I don't remember if your stats improve, but it's about the same time. It's a similar kind of idea where you're competing against each other, but you're also like getting upgrades as you're playing and improving. That one had the weird, interesting idea that like if you're four people playing, one of you will play like the aliens or whatever.
Okay.
That makes sense. Your squad that you play gets points based on how well you do playing the monsters. So you're like incentivized to like screw your friends as hard as possible so that you get bonus points when there are also cards that like deliberately like fucks with the other squads and stuff. Nice. It was a wild game. It was super unbalanced. I think Modiphius did like a version of it later, but that one looks like it probably had like rational rules. So that takes something
to find out.
It's got to be broken garbage. So, but yeah, it was definitely a thing at the time. I think some of that could be like resurrected in modern games.
Pure Blind says he feels like campaigns with no definite ending would be a turnoff for him. And I think so too. I think it's nice. I mean, I also like my second edition Five Project X crew doesn't have an ending. I just bring him out every once in a while, play a game, and then put him away. You know,
yeah,
which is kind of nice that way. But it is good to have a finale.
Yeah, sometimes you can like make your own ending because you might say like, okay, like I'm gonna play until X happens. I'm gonna play like 10 rounds and see where we're at or something.
Yeah,
I know when the what is his name, the guy who does Me, Myself, and Die.
Yeah,
when he did Parsecs, he had like a whole story, and yeah, yeah. Stopped when that story had played out.
Yeah, and Peachy kind of does that too in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're like, you know, I'm only playing this game system for this chunk of my story, and then the story's moving into this game system. So, you know, there's definitely an ending.
Yeah, I'm reminded of this guy played D&D with in college. Where, like, all of his characters were always like a dwarf from the same family.
Oh, yes.
So they would be like, so they're all like nephews or brothers or so on. And he just had this like family tree of dwarves from the same family, but in different like campaigns. So some of them existed in different worlds. Some of them were in Warhammer and so on.
That's pretty hilarious.
So yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, I think it's also depending on like what you want to. I get sometimes like I'll get an email from somebody or see a post on Board Game Geek or something. Somebody's saying like, oh, I play like 800 turns of like five leagues and there's nothing to do in this game. Like, I imagine
500 turns worth.
Yeah, I imagine like the first five turns, you were probably seeing a lot of stuff you had never seen before. And then by turn 782, you were starting to kind of like, okay, see some repeats. It's like those dudes you see on like Steam forums where they're like giving a negative review of a game because after 9,000 hours, they're bored.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, maybe you should have had a set your own goal, right?
You once ruled the realms with dice and a sword. Painted goblins till tea, then your minis were stored. You grew up, got a job, bought a flat, wore a tie. Swapped dragons for deadlines, your brushes went dry. Now the dishes are done and the kids are in bed. You climb to the attic to raise the undead. Crack open the paints that you swore you'd outgrown. The smell of acrylic, it feels like your home. There's grey in your beard, even more on your head. But you're splashing some colour on plastic and lead. So welcome back, General. What took you so long? Your hobby's still here. It's the place you belong. The Bedroom Battlefields Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Don Juan Don says, Heroes of the Artillery Cluster was a fan co-op expansion for X-Wing done by Josh Dirksen. Ah, yes, the... Lysander, was that his name? He's the lead designer of Battledeck Aces and did Snapships and stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people have come up with, you know, like there's been, as soon as like Necromunda came out, people came up, started coming up with, or trying to come up with like bolting that onto Warhammer 40K, usually like in horrible ways. But, you know, yeah, you can... But again, it's about like what you want to get out of it. Is it about upgrading your characters? Is it about like achieving like a goal or something? Is it about because there's some like board game campaigns where like or card game campaigns or something where you don't really like get any better. Like you get better by buying like a card pack, I guess. But it's more just about making. It's like a gauntlet of quests, right? You have to like the Lord of the Rings card game is like this, where there's a bunch of. I think each cycle is like 9 quests if you buy all of them. And you don't like you get new cards with each of the packs, so you get better in that sense. But like, you know, still the same characters you're using, but just trying to like make it through. And it's more of a, I mean, they're kind of light and narrative.
Okay, yeah.
So, or there's those, what are they called? Like the legacy games where you're supposed to like draw on the map and like, I can't play like that stuff.
That stresses me out.
Yeah, it's like, are you put stickers all over? Like, what if you never play the game again? It's just like, you can't start over.
Yeah, can't sell it. I guess that's the big one.
Yeah. Like, there's no... Yeah, I just can't do that. I understand the idea. I understand why people think it's cool, but I just cannot do that. I wonder a lot of, like, different ideas you could adapt to miniatures, and you could probably take something like that and, like, do something with it. Like, Because we played this battle, like, this spell just doesn't exist anymore in the game. Like, you go delete it from the rule book, and going forward, nobody can use that spell because it was cast into the void or something.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of like a unique, like, magical items where they say if you're playing the same campaign with everyone else, only one person can ever have this one sword that's magic.
Yeah. Or you come up with, if you have a game master, it's a little easier because you can just, like, create a unique, like, item. So, like, the magic sword you found for your dude is the only magic sword like that. Like, you can never have another like that. That would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
There's the, I've thrown this in a couple of places, like, suggested when you have, like, random events and stuff where you create, like, a list of, let's say for your JRPG thing, you need, like, a list of, like, unique minor villains. So it's like Grorshak the Goblin kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Side bosses, I guess. And you make, like, 20 of them. So each time you need one, you roll like a d10 and you count down 7 slots. That's the guy you fight. And then you strike him off because he's dead now, hopefully.
Yeah.
Leave him on there if he just trashes the party. But otherwise, he's gone. And then when you get some time, you go back and you add like 5 more at the bottom. So you have this list that keeps, they're all unique, no repeats. But each time you kill one, he's gone forever.
Oh, yes.
And then you just backfill the list so you can kind of keep playing as long as you want. You can do that for like random events or for... so you always have different events. You can recycle some things if you want. You know, you can, maybe Grorshak the Goblin had a brother who's exactly the same, but his name is Brorshak instead because it's a brother, right?
Yeah.
So you can sort of have this, like, I don't know what you call it, like a chain of new characters or items or something.
Yeah. It's a good way for moving the clock along, too, if you're playing through, like, the contained adventures where they have, like, 5 scenarios. Then if you're building up your clock, then you have to face off against, you know, the first boss.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just talking, we're kicking around some ideas for a little project with a couple of friends. And one of the things we were talking about was, because it's supposed to be like a set story, but you could have multiple scenarios at a specific like step of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So like mission 2 is just mission 2. But then for mission 3, maybe there's 3 different choices. So you can play one of those. And then after that, you go to mission 4, and that might have 2 options or whatever.
Yeah, like, yeah.
So each step has like specific missions, but you can add more. So you might go back later because you replay the whole thing. You go back and say, okay, actually, we're going to make like an extra mission 2. And now you have 2 choices when you play it again.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, basically like ways of, but that's kind of the, because it's insane to be like the anti-parsecs. like Mystic Space is anti-parsecs in some ways, and this is going to be like the opposite, where it's like not procedural basically at all, and it's instead very sort of set, just to have done that too.
Yeah, which is fun. I mean, I've enjoyed, you know, thinking about stories and how to write them. Mm-hmm. Just little things. I want to keep everything generic. Like none of the villains or heroes or NPCs or anybody is named, you know. I go by like the Goblin Slayer thing, where like Goblin Slayer is just known as Goblin Slayer, and the Priestess is just known as Priestess, and then there's like Lizardman Shaman, you know, like
right,
they don't have names. You could just make up your own names.
Yeah, and that's part of, you know, as a player, because that lets you like make it my dudes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to, maybe you don't want to, maybe it's literally just my dudes.
Yeah, just keep them as...
It's like the dividing line for playing Dungeons and Dragons is the people who say, there's like people who say, I go over to ask the barkeep.
Oh, yes.
And there's people who say, Thorgal, the fighter, goes over to ask the barkeep. Yes. And then there's this third group who says, my dude asks the barkeep. That's like the three divisions of role playing. So depending on, are you the character? Are you talking about the character? Or are you talking about your dude?
Pureblind has heard that the mission campaign books for Frostgrave are good. You know, I don't remember anything about
them. Endless good things about them, and I have played absolutely none of them. I played like 3 games of Frostgrave ever, I think, a long time ago. It was one of those things where... and I think they have... they have like whole, you know, things you go through and stuff. And some of them, I think, are more narrative than the... Because the base game, what I remember of it, was very kind of like Mordheim-ish. But I think a bunch of the packs have like more story arcs and stuff going on.
Yeah.
And Rangers is, of course, like huge on story.
Yeah.
That's like, story. Yeah, that's the closest to like sitting, you know, with a game master and playing like a scenarios that he created, which I guess it technically is. It's just the game master is like a dude in Minnesota, wherever he lives.
Yeah, I heard in one interview, Joseph McCulloch was saying that he created Frostgrave because he kept yammering on about how Mordheim could be better. And the guy at Osprey is like, okay, just write it.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
At some point, somebody will tell you to yep, put up or shut up. And yep, it worked out pretty well. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, let he who has not written a game out of spite cast the first dice, I guess.
Yeah, there was when we were talking earlier about like overcomplication of things.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a few things where I'm like, is this just too much? Like for the combat mechanics, I have it set so that like your attack stat, say, is 3. Mm-hmm. And your defense stat is 3. So in this case, you take 3 dice and you roll them. And if it's a 1, that's a critical failure.
Okay.
A 4 or 5 is a success, and then a 6 is a critical success. So let's see what you got.
2 sixes and a 1.
2 sixes and a 1 for 3 yeah, dice or 6 dice?
Oh, on 3 dice.
Okay.
Sorry, I got to roll for the other guy.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. So he gets a 1, a 2, and a 6.
A 1, a 2, and a 6. So in this case, this defense would have canceled out 1 success. So oh, 6 is 2, and you lose 1. So you got 1 success.
All right.
And what was your attack roll again?
2 sixes and a 1.
That's really good. So you overwhelm the defense then. Hey. So you got 1 critical failure, but 2 critical successes. So you -1 from 4 and -3.
Yeah.
And does that seem like overly complicated? Because it's an opposed dice roll.
No. The only thing is if you're playing solo, opposed dice rolls can get kind of squirrely. Because like you roll for 1 and then like the cat wants something. And yeah, then you roll for the other guy and then you're like, so I roll a 4 or 5. But you can solve that by just having like 2 different colors. Like you have blue dice yeah, for heroes and red dice for the villains or something.
Yeah, usually I just throw everything in the dice tray or dice tower. If you have, it goes down and that's what you get.
Yeah, if you have like different colored dice or something, that's pretty easy to do. There was one guy, it blew my mind because I literally never thought of it. But I noticed that he just had like, I think he had like black dice and white dice. And the black dice were his heroes in 5 leagues and the white dice were the bad guys. And he just rolled them at the same time.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like, makes sense. And it's one of those stupid things. Like, I literally never thought of it. Like, whenever I tested it, it was always a roll one guy, then roll the other guy. Like, oh my God.
Yeah,
yeah, if you have, I don't think it's an issue. I don't think it's too complicated. The big question with, like, is always, like, how many possible outcomes do you need? Like, if you have, like, a hit, a miss, a critical hit, and a critical miss, that's 4 outcomes, right?
Yeah.
So, which means everything has to like account yeah, for 4 different outcomes. Yeah. So,
and the like, other qualifier is that in defense, 4 doesn't count as success. So you had 1 mm-hmm, critical failure, success, or critical success. So
yeah,
either lose 1, gain 1, or gain 2.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So, and it's usually good, I think, to wait so it's like pro attack.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Otherwise, it's very easy. Like, people don't like if you have to like sit there and like kick each other in the shins for a while.
Yeah.
You know? And for like anime kind of stuff, it needs to kind of move fast. Like yeah, you just get fucking fucked up.
Yeah. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, I don't want any kind of modifiers like +1 to your mm-hmm, roll. I just want another roll. And I was trying to figure out why. And then I was editing an episode today for the podcast. It's like I've been working through the previous ones. And you yourself was talking about how you hate it when you roll something and then like that -1 just takes it away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, maybe that was in my head.
Yeah, it could be. Sometimes, you know.
It's true. What, yeah.
Yeah,
it kind of sucks. Like, you would have gotten it, but there's a -1, so
yeah, no, it's the worst when it's like a role playing game.
Yeah,
somebody like rolls, they think they roll well because they're like a 17, and yeah, then it's like, well, because your character has no legs, it's unfortunately a 3, and you can't yeah, do the thing. Like, god damn it, I would yeah, rather just have like had a shit roll to begin with. But it also depends on like the reason modifiers are like so common is because it's just the easiest way of like putting in stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But doing it without modifiers like forces you to like think really carefully because you can only do like so many things. I just got my 20% battery warning.
Oh no.
Yeah, we're on the countdown. It's gonna shit itself at 10%. So we're like on the last 5 minutes now.
Yeah, okay.
Wrap it up. But the more like things, so like if you don't have any dice modifiers, and it's another roll. So maybe like let's say like if you cast a spell on me, I can do a counter spell and I get a different roll and I can turn the magic around. But that's like, which is cool, but that's also a lot to have for like every single thing. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a bunch of stuff, like if I'm standing higher than you, maybe we just say that doesn't matter, right? Because you don't want to add another rule or roll or thing just for being on higher ground. Whereas if you're using modifiers, maybe that's a plus one on like a d20. It doesn't matter. So I think choosing not to have modifiers helps like narrow down, like what is the real shit that matters on the table?
Yeah.
Or for the characters or whatever. And it helps like pin down like what action, because you have to like put it somewhere in the design, and there's only so many rules and things that you can kind of keep track of, right?
Yeah. For me, I decided instead of modifiers to the roll, you just get more dice.
Yeah.
So if you're up higher, then you get more dice. If you're behind cover, then you get a better dice for defense, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Or more dice for defense.
Yeah. That's, plus it's fun to like, you know, add up like a big old handful.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I'm like, at the very worst, just roll lots more dice. That's what you're here for.
So just have to watch out for because you could get into weird things if like one's kind of against you or something, where like more dice can like penalize you.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's always sideways. Some like any given like dice system is always going to have like some stupid thing.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Like
when you use D6s, people always complain that like, oh, there's not enough outcomes. Trust me, I get those emails all the fucking time.
Yep.
But then if you use a D20, they say that the outcomes are too random. Like, yeah.
You got to use a 2d10 for everything.
Yeah, 3d10 and pick the middle die. That's the only way that's truly fair. It's like those, have you ever seen like the average dice that you can buy? Where it's like the one, it's like, I think the number like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No, I forget. They're basically like, instead of being from 1 to 6, they're like pushed in a little bit.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's 2, 3, 3, 4, 4, 5. So they still give you like a D6 range, except not, you cut the extremes off and put them in the middle, which is one of those things that's like really cool, but you can't put it in a game because nobody has that shit lying around.
Yeah, no.
So you have to tell them like how to, like, oh, if you roll a 1 or a 2, just add 1. And if you roll a 5 or a 6, minus 1. Like, come on.
Seems like an abomination.
Yeah. Well, it's the kind of thing that works if you're selling like a bag of average dice, you know?
Yeah.
So.
So let's wrap it up then, so that your phone makes it through.
It actually started down, like, when I got into the settings, it complains that the battery is dying. So I think it's, like, over. I was looking up, like, because I kind of don't want to, they don't make the small iPhones anymore. So I kind of don't want to, like, so I'm trying to figure out if it's worth just paying $100 to get the battery replaced or whatever it costs.
Yeah. And unfortunately, sometimes you replace it with a battery that's just as old as the one you have.
Yeah.
Because they just stopped making those batteries, too. So they only have his old stock.
That's the other issue, so. Yeah. But at least, hopefully, there's like a warranty or something. So
yeah, well, it'd be a little bit better at the very least. Yeah.
Yeah, it can't be much worse. So
no.
You know, it's like if your car is like a rusted out like Lada or something, like it doesn't matter what you get, you just got an upgrade.
Yeah, it's all upgrade from there. Perfect. Yeah. Okay, well, let's heart attack out.
Yeah.
See y'all later. Bye.
This episode of Bad Internet Friends was streamed live on YouTube and Twitch. There is a North American-friendly live stream every second Wednesday of the month, and a European-friendly live stream every fourth Monday of the month.